Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day, every little thing's gonna be A-OK. A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today. He was 4 when he realized he was an actor. He had shot the entire film of Daddy Daycare and really just thought he was at daycare, and then got to the red carpet premiere and realized, oh, all that stuff he'd been doing and fun he'd been having, well, now it's in a movie. Welcome Max Burkholder to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everybody. My guest today is Max Burkholder. Max stars as the lead of Seth MacFarlane's critically acclaimed series, Ted, a prequel to the hit film franchise. Max is also known for his portrayal of Max Braverman in NBC's long-running award-winning series, Parenthood. He also starred in When the Streetlights Go, and notable recurring roles on television include in Treatment and Brothers and Sisters. On film, Burkholder stars in Blush and Benjamin, but he began his career at a really young age in films including Daddy Daycare, Friends with Money, and The Purge. In the world of voiceovers, Max has voiced characters on a number of hit series, including Invincible, Family Guy, The Cleveland Show, American Dad, and The Land Before Time. But mostly, I'm just so thrilled to welcome young Max to the podcast.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
For folks who don't know, and it really blew my mind to realize that Daddy Daycare, which is like the comfort food for my children and got them through COVID, like, you know, going back and sort of watching things from their childhood. The idea that Max in that movie is the Max that I'm talking to now. You've played more Maxes than probably anyone I know, little known fact. Go back to... I was really excited to have you on this show for 2 reasons. One, I think you're a really incredible actor and you have had such a long career and you are still not 30 years old from what I can gather. So I want to go back before we land on Ted, which is just hilarious and how great that you get to do that. It is on Peacock. When did you realize that you were an actor? Most people go, oh, I want to be an actor, and they go to class and then they get a, you know, backstage and start submitting themselves for things. Right. But you started in a really different way. So can you talk about your youthful journey and when it hit you that actually that's what you do professionally?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I started, I was 3 years old when I started working on Daddy Daycare. I think it came out when I was 5 or 6. So when I started, I had no idea what was going on. I just thought I was going to a place for a few hours to play with some other kids. And every so often, I would have to say some words that people told me to say. And it was a blast. I had a really good time. And then I remember sitting at the premiere and seeing my face on the screen and being like, oh, that's what that was. That
I recognize those people.
We were doing one of those. We were doing one of the ones that, and then you watch it. Okay, now I understand. And I was probably 6 or 7 when I realized, oh, this is like a job. This is like a career. And, you know, by that point, I had already fallen in love with it. You know, it was a blast. It was just playing pretend. And I got to not be in school sometimes.
Right,
And it was
right.
great.
Do you have any memories? Wait, how old are you now, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm 26.
Okay, so this is 20 years ago, more actually.
Yeah.
Do you, first of all, do you have a great memory, like, of your life? Do you have a really good memory in general?
Yeah, I've been told that I do.
Okay, so you're the Mary Lou Henner of this podcast episode today. What do you remember about Eddie Murphy and Jeff Garlin and the world of making that movie?
About Eddie Murphy and Jeff Garlin? I didn't interact all that much with Eddie one-on-one. I played Jeff Garlin's son, so I had more interaction with him. I remember him being just the sweetest, like, still, if we like bump into each other around Studio City, it'll just be like, hey, what's going on? It's like, great. It's great to see you, you know? Eddie, I remember having a little less interaction with him. Little known fact, I remember because kids are able to work for such a limited amount of time, like just a couple hours a day when you're that young, if that. I remember that there were days where a very limited or a zero amount of stuff got shot simply because either the kids would be throwing a tantrum or Eddie that day didn't want to deal with 20 screaming children for very long.
So do you have recollections of sort of your parents talking to you about, do you want to do this, or is it more, I just remember after the fact loving it and wanting to do it more?
I mean, it was tough to explain to a 3-year-old exactly what was going on, especially like during the auditioning stuff. I had no idea what that was. That was even more arcane to my little brain. But yeah, after the fact, you know, when it came out, and honestly, about once a year up until I was like 16 or 17, when they were sure that, like, okay, this kid like really actually wants to do this, they would sit me down and be like, hey, totally okay if you don't want to do this anymore. If there's something else you want to do more, or even if there isn't and you just think that this has run its course, this is not a must thing for you to keep working.
Parenthood was how many years?
It was 6 seasons, but start to finish, from like the pilot to when it ended, it was 7 years.
And how old were you when you started that show?
I was 10.
Right. So we watched you grow up, and you were dealing now with, you went from a really big movie, like a big studio movie that a lot of people saw and loved, to like a really beloved NBC primetime network television show, 22 episodes a year. Like, there's nowhere to hide in the world when you're in such a like beloved, oh my God, we feel like you're our family too,
yes,
kind of part. On that show, you played somebody with Asperger's. And I guess I wonder, because the lines of who we see on TV and who we meet or bump into at a supermarket mm-hmm. can get so blurred, do you feel like people treated you like the character?
100%. I have so many memories of being like at the grocery store with my mom when I was like 11, 12, 13 years old, and people coming up because they recognized me from the show and talking to my mom and asking if it was okay to approach me, which, first of all, good practice. If you see a child actor, don't just approach them. But it wasn't out of like decorum or respect for someone's space. It was like, oh, they thought that I was autistic and they were wondering if like I could carry a conversation. Yeah, they thought that I was on the spectrum. Yeah, so that was a common thing for a few years for sure.
And how did you sort of navigate at a really young age taking on someone who walks through the world in a unique way?
Yeah.
You know, you're starting out so young. I feel like in the world now, we have so many consultants and so many ways mm-hmm. in which we are really respectful of the thing. I mean, Do you think you would still get cast in that part now?
I think I could. I don't think I should. At the time I was 10 years old. I didn't
Of
know
course.
about like identity politics or representation or anything like that. They
Exactly,
did have a
exactly.
number of consultants. They had like child psychologists who were there, who I met with at least in the beginning, just about every episode, just to like go over stuff and just like give reminders on how to, sort of play act and do an imitation of somebody who's on the spectrum in the way that Max was.
Right.
So there was that, and even the showrunner, the head writer, EP Jason Kadams, his son is on the spectrum, and even he was not of the mind at the time of, oh, maybe we should cast a kid who actually is on the spectrum to be in this. Since then he has made a show with people who are on the spectrum, specifically as, I don't want to call it a correction, but as sort of an update into modern times, certainly. And I've interacted with and consumed the content of various creators over the years who are actually on the spectrum, and have come to learn a lot about just like, oh no, totally. I believe myself to be blameless as I was 10 years old, but walking around in the world today would not submit myself for, or put myself on tape for anything that involved a disorder that I don't actually have.
Right. But at the same time, the thing about that show that gave people so much joy is at the heart of it was a family that felt so real and so loving. And Craig T. Nelson and Lauren Graham and Peter
Oh yeah.
Krause. I mean, all so did that must have felt like a real second family to you. And did the lines ever get blurred for you, and how did you feel like I wish I lived with my parenthood family?
No, the lines definitely didn't get blurred in that way. It did feel like a family, of course, towards the end of things. In the middle as well, but it was, people ask all the time, like, do you stay in touch with people from the show and stuff like that? But I was sort of in a weird position because I was obviously a child, so I didn't have much to discuss with the adults. But I was also younger than the older kids and older than the younger kids on the show. So there was never really like, there wasn't really anyone who was at my same like maturity or developmental level. So yes, we were all close, we all loved each other, but there was no one that I was like, ah, you're my guy.
What about on other shows? Like you're on a lot, lots of stuff is shooting. There are other shows, that have families. And did you sort of grow up, was your social life other actors on other shows, or was it people not from work
It was
life?
people not from work, with the exclusion of, I'm still very close with Elle Fanning and her sister from, she was in daddy daycare with me, and our moms got really close. We're family friends. So with the exception of that, mostly people not from work. I was lucky enough to be able to like attend school, like real school, when I wasn't working. I went to a school in LA that was very good about like working with child actors. All of the closest people, all of my closest friends still in life, are from either college or high school. Like,
Wait, so how would that work? How do you pop in? Were there many kids sort of in your situation? And so you would sort of
yeah,
be
there were a
doing the work
few.
on set?
There was infrastructure set up for it at the school for sure. Elle and Ariel Winter were in my class. Dakota was a few years above me. The Olsen twins went there. It's a school called Campbell Hall. It's in the Valley in Los Angeles. So yeah, there was infrastructure set up for it. I would just go to school on days when I wasn't working, and with parenthood specifically, it wasn't too much of an issue because, if there was a very Max heavy episode, I'd be on set 4 or 5 days a week, but there were something like 13 series regulars by the end of it.
Right.
So, even if I was going on set like 3 days a week, I'd only be there for like 3 hours. It was such a well-run, efficient set.
This is such a like, I'm just fangirling for a second, but were you aware that Peter and Lauren were falling in love in real life while you were working on that show?
I know, weirdly incestuous. They were playing brother and sister.
But they were very attractive brother and sister.
Very attractive brother and sister.
It's not their fault. It's not 100%. Their fault.
Very handsome couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wasn't really aware of that. I was just kind of doing my thing. I would just like be a craft service and they'd be talking to each other and be like, oh, hey guys, what's up? Okay. I wasn't really paying attention to that closely.
Fair enough. So you mentioned when we talked about when did Ted start filming, you were like, oh, I do remember because college. So talk to me about the decision.
That was Benjamin.
Sorry, Benjamin. Yes. College is way in the rearview mirror when Ted began shooting.
Yes.
Tell me about that decision at that moment in time to put college into the sentence of your life.
I mean, I took a gap year after high school, which was much needed. It just sort of like I wanted to go. I was just interested, obviously, you know, movies and TV, and my brother went to college for a bit, and you know, everybody in my life was telling me I would be an idiot if I didn't go. I applied to two places. I applied to Harvard and NYU. I got into both. I really wanted to go to NYU. Everybody in my life told me I was an idiot for not going to Harvard, and so I was like, fine, fuck it, I'll go. And you know, I did theater there for the first time, which I fell in love with. I met a lot of great people who I'm still friends with to this day. I learned, you know, obviously the classes were incredibly interesting, but it wasn't for me. It wasn't for me after 2.5 years, you know, a series of depressive episodes that I would spend every break recovering from, just to go back for another semester and get depressed again. I realized, oh, this is bad for me. This is not something I should try and fight through and push through. This is like actively harming my health.
Yeah. That's not the major we signed up for.
No. So my last semester was the fall semester of 2019. I got out right before like COVID and quarantine and all that.
Do you remember what you wrote your college essay about?
You know, there were a number of them. I think my Common App essay I wrote just about, you know, having what was sometimes a full-time job while sort of maintaining everything else, and just about getting through that and fighting through that whole period, I'm pretty sure. And then one of the other ones I wrote about, this was going to be my little known fact, I wrote about teaching horseback riding, because I rode for like 6-7 years growing up competitively.
Okay, who are you? I'm sorry, you're doing a lot for a very young person with a lot of time that is quite structured and where you have to be at work. So you're a doer. Do you write as well?
I have written. I have written enough to know that I'm not a writer. I think I write well whenever I have to give a speech at something. I think I write very well at that. I just get bogged down a little bit when I'm trying to write something with a narrative. It's not quite how my brain works.
Right.
I can come up with a story.
Right.
But when it comes down to the dialogue and the nitty gritty and the progression and the pacing, it's just, I know myself to not be a writer in that context.
So being someone in the public eye, you know, and that public eye in quotes means lots of different things to people.
Sure.
Do you feel like you have developed a public max that has served you, or have you let that go?
That's an excellent question. Yes, I have most. It is a process and it's work that I'm trying to do in terms of letting that go. You know, a lot of voices from when I was very young telling me about how I should behave and how I should be in public and in interviews and somebody recognizes me on the street or whatever. And, you know, as protective and helpful as that was when I was little, I have been trying to do work, you know, especially over the last, you know, few months as press for TED has really spun up, of sort of trying to let that version of me take a back seat, because it is exhausting, because it's just having to perform all the time.
Right.
And it also just doesn't let any of the genuine me come through, which I feel like, first of all, is much more healthy for me, but also people want to see that.
Sure. And you can breathe more easily, I imagine, when there's like a ticker tape sensor going through your mind. Do you feel like because you were so, I don't know, like aligned with these roles, like that's a long time to be in a show. Do you feel like because in some ways Max Braverman wasn't like, you kind of plot heavy, maybe is the best way to describe it. There were special episodes sort of around your characters. Do you feel like that allowed you to sort of become who you were rather than feeling like the scripted character that you were playing for all those years? Or did it still get a little confusing?
There were times, especially in the beginning when I was little, like, you know, sort of like 10 to 12, where there would be some crossover and there would be some like bleeding into real life, just in terms of like, you know, if you're spending all these hours a day really focused on doing these particular mannerisms, it'll bleed over 100%, especially when you're that young. As I got older, it obviously got easier to just like flip that switch on and off, when need be. But yeah, there definitely was some crossover there.
So it sounds like college was incredibly difficult and incredibly impactful for you, right? Like when something like that happens, the journey of getting through it can be so pride making, right? Like you got through something that it sounds like on your mental health was tremendously damaging, and you you got out, as it were, and I'm sure you're dealing with it still. Like we don't just 100%. Wake up and like, oh, new environment, I'm fine, like,
I'm better, yeah. I'm fixed.
Thank you. You know what, Harvard, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
but tell me, like, the decision, and maybe the decision was never like, I'm going to go to school and see if I want to do something else. Maybe the decision was, I'm going to go to school and study theater and do plays and just get to do other things within the industry. But when you got out or got to a place where you were like, okay, I feel okay. I feel like I can get back into the swing of some sort of professional. Was there any doubt that you would go back to voiceover or acting work? Or was there a moment where you were like, what else might I?
Growing up and when I first got to college, there was always I always knew that this is what I wanted to do forever. But, you know, there's always thoughts of just like, oh, what if, or maybe, you know, there was a period of time where I really wanted to be a veterinarian. There was a period of time where I was like, I'm going to go to the Naval Academy because that's the quickest way to become an astronaut.
Right. I wish you had done that.
Yeah.
I want to do that.
I'm
going to
get a letter from my state representative so that I can go to the Naval Academy. Really wouldn't have suited me at all.
Probably not. Running. Yeah.
I really hate running.
Yeah.
There was a period of time where I was like, hey, if this acting thing doesn't work out, I think I could become like a psychologist. I think I could be a therapist. Mm-hmm. So there were vague ideas of backup plans, but around a year into college when I met like, oh, these are the people who are actually going to become astronauts. These are the people who are actually going to be the math science people. I was just like, oh, sick. So these people have that covered. So I don't need to do that. I can just focus on the thing that is my favorite thing to do in the world, which is why I still do it.
Mm-hmm. So when you got out of school and you sort of, you're back out there, people know that you're a veil. He's a veil.
Yes.
Obviously you'd work with Seth MacFarlane in the MacFarlane or MacFarlane. How does he say it?
MacFarlane.
MacFarlane. You know, he knew your voice really well and it really suited the hilarious characters that he's written in so many shows. How did Ted come about? Were you familiar with the Ted films?
Because I was a kid who was just off and around the Family Guy studios, when it came time for the table read for the first Ted movie, they needed somebody to play the creepy kid character in the table read. So I was just around and I did that. So in a weird way, I've been involved with the franchise since the beginning, and it's kind of a full circle moment. Yeah, I was definitely aware and a fan of the franchise beforehand.
So how did this happen? Because this is like a big deal. Like people were very excited, and there were a lot of people who wanted your part. They're all here. They'll all be here in a minute to join us to talk to you about it.
Oh, God.
All of them. Yeah. Wait. So. How did it happen?
Very unusually, I would say. This was the case for me and my co-star Georgia, who plays my cousin Blair on the show. I recorded a self-tape and I sent it in, and it just kept getting kicked on up the ladder, and then I got the part. There was no follow-up audition. There was no revisions asked for. It was just off the one tape, which is quite unusual in the industry, as I'm sure you know.
Well, that is incredible. I mean, obviously, Seth knew you and you had a body of work beforehand. But tell me about this self-tape. What did you do? And do you have it?
It's got to be somewhere. But maybe I deleted it. I honestly should hit up someone at Peacock or maybe Seth just to see if it still exists somewhere. I don't want to say that I phoned it in because I didn't. I worked very hard on it, but I was like, there's no shot. That I don't have a shot at this. I was 24 at the time, auditioning to play 16. I was like, this is not believable anymore. Like, I've always played, you know, characters younger than myself just right. Throughout my entire career. But I was like, yeah, this is not believable. No one's going to buy me at 16. I'm just going to do a good tape. I'm going to send it in. Maybe they like it. And they bring me in for a guest spot later in the season or something. So it was at my parents' house in LA, filmed with an iPhone, no tripod. It was like balanced against some books on a table. The backdrop was a blanket hung from a curtain rod. My brother was reading with me, and it was pretty good tape, I think, but just none of the recommended stuff that they say you should do for a self tape went into it. I didn't have a nice camera. I didn't have lighting. It was as unprofessional a self tape as I've ever sent in, I think.
Do you feel like part of it, obviously, you must have talked to Seth since then. Do you feel like the whole process of having you even go on tape was sort of just for him to show the higher ups, like, oh, you know what, this is my choice and I think he can do it? Or do you feel like you were honestly one of many, many, many contenders?
I don't know about contenders, but I know that it wasn't like a thing of like, I think that's my guy, here's his tape that I asked for. You know, I worked with him a ton growing up, and I was on an episode of his sci-fi show, but we never worked that like closely or tightly. We never really had like, yeah, especially when I was little, I was a kid, like we never really had like a working relationship or a relationship outside of work until this show. So it wasn't like a thing of just, oh, I know Max is going to be able to do this. I know that they were having, by the time I sent in my tape, I know that they were having a hell of a time trying to cast the role. I know that they were considering putting ads out on TikTok for, you know, people to submit themselves. I think it was really just a matter of Seth, when he know when he sees or knows what he wants, he knows that he wants it.
Right.
Like it's just a thing of he when it comes to those decisions, he's very quick and he's very efficient.
Was there a pilot or was it a straight to series order?
It was straight to series.
So the kind of like pros and cons of getting something quote unquote really easily is not having had the benefit of like the process to
yes.
to build the relationship with the creators and to build a relationship of confidence within yourself so that
yes,
by the
you
time
get
you get to set. So I have a lot of friends and myself included, when this has happened, we spend the entire first episode just, when am I getting fired? Like that's the underlying, what is my action? What is my objective? Not to get fired. So did you feel that
yes.
way? So how did you deal with that?
Yeah, especially, I mean, the it was about a month between when I sent in the tape to when I got hired. And the entire time, I was here in New York at my old apartment, and I was freaking out the entire time as like it kept getting kicked on up the ladder, and then we entered negotiations. I was like on the phone with my people every day being like, do they need me to fly out to LA? Do they need another tape? Is there somebody, is there something I can do? Is there someone I can talk to? Because I just wanted to be able to do something about it. And, you know, I was obviously very happy when I got the part. And then I would say, especially because this is sort of the biggest thing that I've ever been at the forefront of to date. For the first like 2-3 weeks that we were filming the first episode that we shot, we filmed out of order. I was like freaking out, imposter syndrome. I was like, holy crap, can I hack this? Like what is going on? And after a bit, you know, it was a great set. Everybody was so, so kind and so supportive. After a bit, I was like, okay, wait, I know how to do this. Like I'm funny. I can act. I can pretend that there's a little guy there when there's not a little guy there. Like this is all stuff that I'm capable of.
That's really hard to go through and work at the same time. When we can have
oh,
our
yeah.
breakdowns in private, it, you know, they're not fun, but they're private. So how do you, for folks who might have the feeling of imposter syndrome, which can follow you down any lane of life, it doesn't just have
yes.
to be work. It can literally be all sorts of things. Is there something now that you're on the other side of it, at least with this one, with this job and this show and these people, if you could go back and go, here's my advice to whoever may be listening right now, who's like, that's exactly what I'm going through right now, and I am paralyzed yeah. from it. Can you share anything that might be helpful from your journey?
I mean, it sucks. There's no way around it. It sucks. And there's no real way, which is brutal. There's no real way to think yourself out of it. It's just something that's gonna crop up. You can't logic your way out of something you're feeling in your body. That's not how it works. You can't use your mind in this particular case to shift your emotions and your mental state. It's just not how it works. It's advice that I always hate receiving, but sometimes the only way out is through. And you know, some advice is ignoring that feeling and trying to push it down is not going to work. It's going to be there, and if you try and push it down, it's just going to come back at the worst time. And also, you're using a hell of a lot of mental energy, and you know, it translates physically as well.
Right.
You're using a hell of a lot of energy pushing and pushing and building up a wall and trying to get it out of here and ignore it, that would be much better served doing the work that you're there to do, whether it's work, whether it's your hobby, anything. Right. It's a waste of energy trying to ignore it or trying to get away from it. And you know, it's terrifying advice, and it's stuff that I still have to work at putting into practice, but letting yourself feel that and like really, really welcoming it in is a really good way of fighting off those scaries.
So you are now number one on the call sheet. I mean, maybe the bear is one. I don't know if it's Ted.
Seth is number one as the bear. Yes, I am second lead to the bear.
Second on the call sheet of a human, a non-animated character.
Sure, yes.
And so there's kind of like, that's new for you in the TV world. Does that give you... when you look back at sort of sets you've been on and memories of like number one, number two on the call sheet and how that affects the work environment, do you feel a kind of responsibility or joy about it?
I had some ideas like right when I got cast about just like, oh man, am I going to be like the mood maker or anything like that? And you know, pretty soon after I got cast, I stopped having those thoughts because I was like, wait a minute, like one of the kings of comedy is going to be directing every episode and voicing this thing. This ain't on my show. It was a relief, honestly, right, to be like, oh wait, this ain't on my shoulders. Nobody's going to be looking at me for leadership.
We're going to look at Seth. At Seth, guys. Right. And
yeah,
what would you
exactly
say is his, like what makes him unique and special in that way?
He can wear a million hats at once, do all of them perfectly and efficiently, and still have time to make unscripted dick jokes, both while we're rolling and not. Like that, I don't know how he has the time to do anything, to literally do anything, because he's always doing everything. It's wild.
But his brain works so fast.
It just does. It just does. He's built different, as we kids say.
So thank you for saying we. How many episodes did you shoot?
Seven, but I believe the pilot counted as two, so technically eight.
And
the pilot
so now
was like a double episode.
It's out in the world. And it's very exciting. Are you doing something else right now, work-wise, while this is out and airing?
Just auditioning. Really, we're sort of back in that zone now. The strike's over. We got a good deal. I'm happy about it. Things have been a little slow just because January is always slow, I feel like, in the industry, especially since pilot season isn't really a thing anymore.
Right.
Auditions here and there, just kind of chilling, going to class. You got to always be going to class for sure. Yeah.
Like a scene study class?
Yeah, scene study.
And is there a scene you're working on right now?
No, not right now. The semester, whatever, six-week run has just ended. Most recently, I did a scene from Uncle Vanya, which was super fun. I was Vanya. I grew out like my neck beard and I looked kind of like crazy and scraggly. That was a blast for sure.
Well, I'm really excited to see the Uncle Vanya that's going to be happening. The Sarah Rule Uncle Vanya coming out. I think, who is starring in it? Steve Carell, I think, or yeah.
Am I
hallucinating right now? I think that's,
I didn't know about
in
this.
It. And forgive me, listeners, if my brain is conflating different Steves and Uncle Vanya's. Well, Max, congratulations on this incredible show. And what an incredible run of things you have been on that have brought us so much joy and entertainment. And so before I let you go, and I can't let you go without saying that your mom, Kelly Wolf, is just one of the most glorious humans on the planet. And I feel so lucky to have had her in my life. all these many years. And I'm so glad she had you. And what is a little known fact, beside that I love your mom, and I'm sure you love your mom, that you can share?
Well, I had two options in mind coming into this. The first we've already mentioned is that I rode horses competitively for a number of years. It was really fun. I did hunters and jumpers, but I much prefer jumpers, where the goal is to get over the fences as quickly as you can without knocking any of them over. That was a blast, just going as fast as I possibly could on the horse. And the other one is so the live action Avatar: The Last Airbender movie, M. Night Shyamalan, which won Razzie for Worst Picture of the year that it came out. I was originally cast as the lead. I signed the contract and everything. I was in martial arts training for a year to learn everything I needed to learn. And right before the first round of filming was supposed to start, I believe in Greenland, they were like, wait a minute, we should just get a kid who already actually knows how to do crazy martial arts shit. And so I got cut from that. I was devastated. And then immediately following, I got Parenthood, which I wouldn't have been able to do.
So guys, if you don't get the first job, you'll get Parenthood. It's just that simple.
Exactly. It's the universe.
All right. Well, here's to Parenthood. Here's to you. Thanks for being on the podcast today. What a pleasure. And until next time.
Until next time. Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
Thanks for being here.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
I have some news. Little Known Facts is now available to watch on YouTube. Hours and hours and hours of interviews that you can see my fabulous guests. And guess what? It's called Little Known Facts with Alana Levine. Catchy, right? Anyway, head on over to YouTube and watch the podcast. And please don't forget to subscribe. Also, if you want to donate to the podcast, zero pressure. But if you want to, no donation is too big or too small. I am so grateful for you for listening. But if you want to donate, just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Lastly, Little Known Facts is recorded in Brooklyn, New York, USA. My editor is Nicholas Klar. None of this happens without Nicholas. And the Little Known Facts theme song was composed and sung by Georgia Famusa, with backup vocals by Caleb Famusa. Thank you for listening and have an amazing day.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.